So what do a couple of old Brit guys know about mutants and comics and X-Men?
Doesn't it ever wake you in the middle of the night? The feeling that someday they will pass that foolish law, or one just like it, and come for you and your children.
It does indeed.
What do you do
when you wake up to that?
I feel a great swell of pity for the poor soul who comes to that school looking for trouble.
Sir Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen playing Xavier and Magneto, respectively, in the X-Men movie franchise. There's a new one being filmed right now. Both men playing mutants as if they were born to it.
Say, I am happy.
I am happy.
So am I.
So am I.
We are happy.
We are happy.
What do we do now that we're happy?
That's Ian McKellen on a Broadway stage with Patrick Stewart and Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot, a show they are performing together with the Harold Pinter play No Man's Land. Four actors, Stewart and McKellen, are joined by Billy Crudup and Shuler Hensley for the two-show production running in repertory. Sir Ian McKellen stopped by the green space at WNYC yesterday for a live lunchtime chat with a studio audience. He talked about Beckett, about Pinter, and X-Men, and how he responded when director Bryan Singer thought he would be perfect to play an X-Men mutant.
When Bryan Singer asked me to get involved, I didn't know the X-Men comics, and was a little bit bewildered as to how I could fit in. And he said to me, being a mutant, which is what all the X-Men are, and the difficulties that they face in a society that doesn't like them because they're different, is something that an openly gay person might want to be involved with. And he, Marvel indeed pointed out that the demographic for their popularity is amongst young blacks, young gays, and young Jews. And that those people, having been taught by society that their difference is a disadvantage, would respond to the problems of being a mutant, where your great gifts are not appreciated by society at large. And so I went into X-Men thinking of it as a bit of a political statement and rather than just a distraction from real life. And the whole thing has come to a wonderful thing this week when Ellen Page, who plays one of the mutants, has just come out herself, which is just wonderful. And this is my moment to send her my congratulations, because I don't have her email.
You know, she said she got tired of hiding it.
Yes.
Is that an experience you had at what?
Yes. Oh, it's dreadful. The only advantage of being gay is that we've all been through something that straight people don't have to go through. And we are challenged in a way that others are not. And most people, quite rightly, fall in love and take for granted that other people will like the fact that they're in love and want to support them in their love, and if they choose to turn that love into long-term relationship and marriage, then society wants to bolster that and recognise it. And that's not been on off until very recently, and in many parts of the world, including this country, still not possible for gay people. So when Pat Stewart said to me about a year ago, would I marry him, I thought, I didn't know men were allowed to get married in the States. He said, no, he explained, no, he was going to, actually, I was going to officiate at his wedding. Oh, I see that.
So let's talk for a moment, since you mentioned this sort of mutant, sort of gay idea.
Yeah.
One of the most spectacular movies I ever saw was the movie you were nominated for an Oscar for, Gods and Monsters, about an openly, yes, how many of you have seen? It's about the director of the classic movie with Boris Karloff, Frankenstein. Jimmy Whale, the director of the movie, is an openly gay director in Hollywood in the 1920s or 1930s?
30s, yeah.
In the 1930s, at a time when this was just utterly impermissible, and he didn't care and did whatever he wanted to. First of all, give me your impressions of that film. I have a couple of questions just about how amazing that film is.
The interesting thing is nobody else cared. And why would they care? I mean, if you're a good director and get on with the job and produce movies like Frankenstein and The Invisible Man and Showboat, who's going to worry what your private life is like? And nobody really did. That wasn't true for actors and still isn't true. But that film catches him at the end of his life, and it's as much about a man who's dying and raging against that as it is about a gay man. But for me and everyone involved in the film, felt that if people enjoyed this film, then that they would know a little bit more about not just Hollywood history, but about what it was like to be a gay person in show business. And it was very close to my heart.
It makes you rethink the movie Frankenstein, which I think played to me in my generation as a sci-fi thriller. But you, by the end of this movie, you see his open gayness concealing a deeper, darker history of his experience in World War I, which, and the Frankenstein, the movie by the end, is a complete metaphor for his experiences in the trenches. And I was completely blown away by that.
That was another big thing in his life. Yes, he had served in the First World War and survived. And anyone who did that, you know, with millions of young men dying on the battlefield, slaughtered of all nationalities in Europe, if you survived, before thanking anybody, you must have felt guilty. Why was I allowed to live? To see the acres of tombs in Northern Europe where these lads waste. And Jimmy Weir clearly felt that strongly. And I had great love for people who died next door to him, in his arms. Who knows what happened?
It's remarkable. A couple of minutes before we wind up here. Can you resolve the whole Godot controversy? Is that just something the Yanks have messed up again?
No,
you know?
I don't think so. I mean, written in French, the name would be Godot. But he insisted that it should be pronounced Godot. Why? I also worked out that the tree on the stage, I was very pleased when I thought of this, the tree on the stage is a willow. The French for willow is saule, S-A-U-L-E, saule. So there is constantly in the middle of this play about God, a saule growing.
There is this, I don't know how much television you watch, but thinking about some of the things that cross the Atlantic, there's this Jaguar commercial. I don't know if you've seen it. It's got Ben Kingsley in it.
Oh, yes.
It's getting heavy rotation, and it's all about, like, the bad guys always have British accents.
Oh, dear. Well, at the heart of British theatre is the English language, a language that Shakespeare invented, really, and confirmed. You know, once Shakespeare had happened, the language was never going to be the same. But we're still speaking that language, and we still understand it. And it's popular throughout the world. And so it's the greatest gift that a British actor can have been given to have been born speaking this very complicated, very difficult, beautiful language that can, through which you can say precisely what you mean, precisely what you feel. You can rest on the security of the language. And as I say quite early on in No Man's Land, I'm a poet, I say to the other man on stage, and I say, all we have left is the English language.
Well, thank you so much for glorifying the language and everything else by being with us. Thank you. Our warmest thanks to Sir Ian McKellen, who joined us at the Green Space here at WNYC. And you can check out the full interview at thetakeaway.org.